listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO-FM and KRXO-HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, reaching over 1 million Oklahomans every week. Now, the Outdoor Hour, giving you the inside scoop on the great outdoors on 107.7 The Franchise.
As long as I can remember, I've been drawn to the outdoors. There's something primal in each of us that awakens when we step outside the bounds of modern society and back into the vast possibilities of the natural world. The more civilized our lives become, the louder our hearts cry for reconnection with our native ways. Failure is imminent, danger's drawing nigh, but approached with reverence and tact, the outdoors return wisdom and gain. In both the outdoors and in life, harvests are fleeting, but lessons and memories abound. With that in mind, we step forth boldly together in pursuit of ourselves outdoors. We are nothing more than tree stand troubadours. Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour. We back.
What up, man?
I didn't know if we were if I should have said we're back too, and we were gonna do that thing, but Josh isn't here, so
I know.
Like our
Josh usually
our echo.
Okay, yeah, that's okay though. We don't need it. I feel like you and I just did this, but it also feels like it was forever ago.
I was just in this seat staring at you where you are right now.
Yep.
But yet it's been like a year.
I probably had my feet kicked up just like I do now.
You do. And we had our lovely Chloe in earlier to take some
social
pictures.
Social media director.
Yep. Yeah.
Chloe Young, shout out.
Always fun.
Yeah.
So what's up, man?
It's good to see you, man. This is the Outdoor Hour. I am Taylor Maples. I just shot a bear. That's just the best part of my whole week.
You like that, don't you?
I especially like it when Josh isn't around because I don't feel as self-conscious enjoying it, you know?
You definitely did not look self-conscious enjoying that. I'll give you that one.
We are without Joshua Wildman Stratton.
Where in the world is Joshua Wildman Stratton?
He's in Colorado right now. We're going to have some great content in the coming weeks for you with all of the adventures of Joshua Wildman Stratton. Since he's been with us here in the studio, he was in Alaska scouting locations for a black-tailed deer hunt film project. He flew from Alaska to Hawaii and I believe did some hog hunting, maybe some spear fishing. Some adventures there on the island with the Mule Deer Foundation. I believe then went back to Alaska to actually film the Blacktail Hunt project. And then immediately was supposed to come home, ended up in Florida doing some hurricane recovery stuff. Good on him for getting out there and volunteering. And, you know, with his background in Florida, saltwater fly fish guiding and all that. He's got a lot of community down
sure.
there. So good on him for making an effort to get down there and help. But now he's in Colorado. And I'll be honest, I can't remember what he's even doing in Colorado this week.
I don't see how you'd lose track with everything you just said. Good grief.
Yeah. He's a busy guy.
This dude, we need to catch on his heels and go do some stuff with him, man.
But it's really nice to have somebody that contributes to this show that is actually out there doing the stuff that I wish I could be doing.
Well, let's hang on here. I mean, we're based in Oklahoma, so is your show.
Mm-hmm.
You get out in Oklahoma. I get out in Oklahoma. We enjoy what this state has to offer on the outdoor scale. So I can see both sides of that.
Yeah,
it's good to get a national perspective, I guess, but I'm sure there are those that listen to the show that like to hear a local perspective, and that's what we're here to bring them. So
we'll do more of that today. Yeah. Behind the glass, the one and only Matty Goldfish.
Always baked and extra cheesy.
I love
the goldfish.
And back with us this week, our guest, a good friend of ours from Duncan America, member of the territory, I've recently learned. Although you don't really advertise that, I don't think, and I just said it on the radio.
So way to go, Tom.
100,000 watt stick, and everybody in the tri-state area now knows.
Maybe, how about this? I was once, now I'm not.
There we go.
Yeah, we'll play it off that way.
That's Dave Myrick in the house.
What's up, everybody? Hope you're doing well. Yeah, Taylor, you just mentioned we were just doing this on the heels of the first day of archery season.
That's right.
Exactly. I think it might have been the day after that.
Yeah, so it wasn't even a month ago, but it was just about a month ago. We both had pretty exciting first sits.
We did.
I know you've had some deer down on your lease already. Have you been back out?
You know, I have with doing everything for the franchise for OU football and calling high school football. Man, these weeks and weekends, they just stay strapped up during football season. But, yeah, I've made it back down, I think, twice. But it was afternoon sits when it was hot, not in the rut yet, not a lot of activity going on. And it's funny, we brought up turkeys before we started the show. Man. So where we decided to put that new feeder and fill it to draw things off the northern city property is awesome. The drawback, the turkeys on property roost right behind it. And they are out, I mean, constantly around the corn, scaring off fawns, does. The bucks, in turn, aren't coming in because there's no does to chase. So it's been a double-edged sword, and we're trying to figure out something to do to get these turkeys to, you know, kind of vamoose somewhere else on the property without deterring deer on top of that. So one thing about being on a lease, I can tell you, there's always another problem. You think you got something solved, and on the heels of that, maybe the solution is, you know, when turkey season opens up, we just take down 15 shotguns and get after it.
Yeah, it's gotten tougher being a one-tom tag state in recent years.
Yes.
It takes a little bit more effort. You got to get a bunch of guys down there. But you know there is a fall archery turkey season that coincides exactly with the deer dates. The Oklahoma fall archery turkey is October 1st through January 15th.
No kidding.
You've got to have a specific tag. But you can harvest. Same rules apply in terms of it's got to be a legal bearded tom.
Yeah.
But you can harvest as long as it's with archery equipment. You can harvest a tom in the fall.
Oh, if I knew that, I'd forgotten it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's been 6 million opportunities from my tree stand where I could have pulled back and taken a nice tom.
So, and this is one of my favorite things about early deer season, especially before the rut activity is really happening and there's a ton of excitement to be in the woods. I'm with you. I love getting out every chance I get.
Right.
But my schedule is busy. I've got a family. Like, I need to pick my spots pretty strategically when I'm going to go deer hunting. But one of my favorite things to do this time of year, when it's still 80, 90 degrees, is I'll take my turkey calls with me.
Okay.
And if I'm having a sit and it seems slow, or I know my winds or scents have gotten wrong just because I'm sweating profusely or anything, I'll just start chirping with some turkeys and playing. I love turkey hunting. I don't know if you and I've had this conversation, Dave, but I had never hunted turkeys a day in my life until we moved to Oklahoma.
Okay.
And it wasn't ever really something that was on my radar, but we started this Outdoor Hour radio journey in like January or February 3 years ago. And thinking about how we were going to structure the show for that first year was like, we've got a lot of time before we get to deer season, duck season, what was more of my background.
Right.
And I was like, what are we going to talk about? We could do some fishing, some pond fishing stuff in the summer, but you know, I hadn't really gotten all that back into fly fishing yet. I'd never been to Arkansas. I had never been, you know, to the Blue and some of the opportunities around here. So I just kind of said, I'm going to make it a challenge to go head over heels into turkey hunting this first spring.
Nice.
And it was like, if you go back and listen to our first month or 6 weeks of episodes, it was all turkey hunting experts. Like, teach me about turkey hunting.
Yeah.
I literally don't know, do you sit in a tree stand? Are you in a ground blind? Are you just walking around? What are calls? And people would come in and like demonstrate, well, here's a pot call and here's a box call and these are mouth reads. And like, I very transparently started this Outdoor Hour journey saying, I know nothing about turkey hunting.
Teach me.
But I'd like to try it. And I fell in love
with
turkey
hunting. Dude, it's a trip, isn't it?
It's an adrenaline rush. People had told me this because I do have a lot of friends out west that hunt turkeys, and I just had never done it, partially because the season coincides with baseball season.
Right.
So it was just not available to me. People say if you like elk hunting, you'll love turkey hunting because it is a very similar tactic and that you're moving around covering ground to find birds, but once you find them, you kind of post up and try to flirt with them and call
them
into
in, yeah.
you. They're like little feathered elk, is what I've heard. And it's fun, man. I am ate up with it. But here's something else I want to argue with you on. I, for one, love when turkeys are around my spread, my feeder, my stands, when I'm chasing big bucks.
Okay, tell me why.
I've talked to a lot of people about this. I haven't proven this. I have never killed a buck around turkeys, mm-hmm. but I get a lot of game trail cam photos of bucks and turkeys together.
Okay.
And I think that it is easier to calm down an environment of turkeys than it is to calm down a ticked off doe. If you've got a doe that's blowing, or you've got an environment that maybe is not a perfect setup for enticing that big buck to step out 5 minutes before legal light ends,
sure.
I think you've got an easier chance calming down ticked off turkeys. And so I will intentionally carry a mouth reed with me when I'm going buck hunting, knowing that archery season coincides, because I know if I say as if it's a scientific, it's just my gut tells me.
Okay.
If I can get turkeys around, and I had this actually happen on my most recent sit, I had about 22, because I counted them, I had 22 turkeys that were kind of playing around the area that I was in, and I first spotted them with my binos way off in the distance. And I was thinking, man, if these guys actually work their way in here, I might try to pick out a tom and take a shot. But over the course of a couple hours, I'm watching these turkeys work through this tree area, and they finally did come in. They were at about 15 yards. There was really only one respectable beard in the group, and I decided just to let him walk because I'm trying to regenerate our turkey population out there. But I'm amazed at how much ruckus turkeys make
no
in the
doubt.
Woods.
No doubt.
And it's no amazing doubt. To me how quiet and stealthy we as hunters need to be mm-hmm. in a tree compared to the amount of noise that turkeys make. And when you get 20 plus of them moving together, I mean, they sound like elephants moving through the woods.
Have you heard them actually take up to find a roost when
yes.
they do it? That's loud.
So I've heard fly downs. This last, maybe a week ago when I went out for a sit, and that's the story I'm telling you, I actually heard them fly up
right.
at the end of the day, and I never heard that.
That's loud.
It's clumsy.
I know.
It's loud. And I'm with you. You would think, man, there's not going to be a deer in a 500-yard radius of this because there is so much noise happening here. But those turkeys do that every night.
Right.
And in a lot of places, those turkeys are doing that in those exact trees
yeah.
every night.
Yeah.
Maybe for a week or two at a time.
Yeah.
Right? And then they may go somewhere else a little bit. But again, this is not scientific. This is just a gut feeling I have. I like having turkeys around because I feel like it allows me to get away with more. Because I think the deer know, A, there's going to be more noise. There's going to be more commotion because there's turkeys, and maybe they can write off my stand clicking as I shift my weight as just something that a turkey did.
Yeah.
And it's also something else to distract those deer so that if I, you know, move and I get a shimmer of light off of, you know, a cam on my bow from sunset or something, I feel like the more commotion there is in the woods, the more disguised I am.
It covers you more.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll say this to that. I think you and I talked on the last show that bucks will oftentimes wait for younger bucks and spikes to go out
yeah.
as kind of a scout. So if they see turkeys around, you know, not being destroyed, obviously they feel it's safe.
Yeah.
So I can see that part of it. The problem we're running into is they're eating up all the corn on the ground. So double-edged sword, right?
Yeah.
You get bucks that come in at a certain point every night, and the big boys come out right at dark. And there's nothing on the ground. That happens a couple times. What happens? They stop coming. So I get it, and I'm with you. I mean, you came down and hunted our lease. I'm not sure. Did a train come through at the same time you were hunting?
No.
You saw the tracks?
Yes.
Okay. So I always like that when a train does come through because that's when I can actually move and
yeah.
shift, you know, get off one sheet, go to the next, take
right.
a breath. So I'm with you on that. When there's turkeys around, you don't have to feel quite as careful, but – with ours, there are so many. That's why I was amazed. You said you didn't see one the day you went down to hunt. There's like three different flocks of 20 to 30 that will come through one after another, and they all roost at the same spot. That creek is right behind the stand I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So at night when they're getting up there at the exact same time the big boys would come out, it's just a, you know, you can't help but feel they're making too much noise back here, and that's going to draw things away, plus eating up everything on the ground. When they come through during the day, you know, before you really get into magic hour, I don't mind that. You know, there's still corn on the ground. They're making noise, which means you can kind of relax a little bit. But it's a balance right now.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what the solution is. I'm not sure if it's that big of an issue or if it's just that it got cool. We saw a lot of bucks on camera. Now it got hot again, and we're not seeing them. And it's a coincidence that the turkeys are around. But Jeff Couch, our engineer, creeping around. Hopefully they find that easy button to tear this place apart for the Christmas thing. But no, I'm with you. Anything that makes noise that's natural to that area, I like. Because,
yeah,
it can allow you to take a breath. You have to be very careful when you're up to not get blown at, not get winded. So that kind of allows a little bit. It's just a weird balance being struck right now.
I'm curious if anybody else out there has opinions on turkeys. You and I are not the first people to have this conversation.
Absolutely.
We haven't
not.
Come up with anything. Send us a note either on Twitter or on Instagram. The Outdoor Hour, you can find both on each of those platforms at outdoor_hour. Drop us a tweet or a comment or something, direct message. I'm curious if you have an opinion or an experience deer hunting around turkeys, whether it is beneficial or detrimental to what you're trying to do. I'm with you. It is a lot of commotion.
Yeah.
I have taken the opinion, again, this hasn't resulted in me killing more big deer or anything like that, but I've taken the position that that feels more natural than if the turkeys are always roosting in those trees and on one night for some reason they don't, that would trigger deer fight or flight more than them going and doing what they normally do.
Let me preface what I just said with this. I think it matters the time of day this happens.
Sure.
Yeah. If it, like I said, if it's 3:30 in the afternoon, I don't care. Get out and make all the noise you want. If it's, you know, 10 minutes before shooting light is gone and they're trying to roost 10 feet behind me, that's an issue. So,
yeah. And I do think there's something to that. We got to squeeze in a break, but last thing I'll tell you about turkeys and deer hunting. I've told you in the past, I will pick one arrow and it's like my gamer.
Your
and
go-to.
I'll shoot it into foam at a target. I'll make sure my sight pins are fine-tuned and that'll be the arrow I hunt with, right? I saw these turkeys working through the other day, and I actually pulled another arrow out of my quiver, and I set it on my seat next to me. And I thought, man, if these turkeys work their way in, I'm not going to shoot my gamer at a turkey, but I might take a shot at a turkey. So I put another arrow just sitting on my ladder stand with me, just to be ready, right?
Yeah, sure.
I could move enough with turkeys moving around to be able to flip out my arrows. As soon as I do that, a buck walks out. And it wasn't a shooter buck.
Yeah.
But so now I'm sitting here thinking about these turkeys that at this point are still 100 yards away.
Okay.
And I wasn't calling or anything. I was just going to kind of naturally see where they're moving. This buck came in, small buck, but a buck. So I'm thinking, you know, is the big buck following him?
Waiting, yeah.
And I've got this other arrow basically sitting in my lap. And I'm like, I'm going to end up dropping this arrow, it's gonna clink its whole way down the ladder. Like, I now need to find a time that I can put this arrow back away, you know.
Yeah.
And I probably spent an hour trying to pick a spot that I
finagled.
Just the dumb stuff we do.
I know, man.
You
That's
know?
Why I love it when a train comes through. I'm telling you, right when I got on the lease, I'm like, oh, great, a train. Dude, I have used that thing to my advantage more times than I can count.
You've got to.
Love it.
Did I tell you about the first shot I took at a deer and the airplane that helped me get that shot off?
Oh, no.
Let's
Same
squeeze in a break.
Okay.
Same type of deal. I'll tell you that when we come back. This is the Outdoor Hour on 107.7 The Franchise.
You're listening to the Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor Hour. Taylor Maples, Dave Myrick. I was going to call you David just to do it.
Be like a family member.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the only people on earth that still are like, I'll get a text like, David, Thanksgiving. I'm like, David. Got to be my sister.
That is what I'm going to call you from now on, David.
I mean, your family. Might as well.
Aww.
So is Taylor.
You got all sweet with it. Thank you.
We're up here.
Love you
the,
too, bro.
The out love. It's all about love with the Outdoor Hour.
Yeah.
This is a family, y'all.
It's a family. And you, this is a family show.
Those that hunt together, stay together, family-wise.
As long as Josh isn't here, it can be family-friendly. Oh, yeah, that's that picture. You just sent me some turkeys.
Yeah, man. I mean, that is like, I'm serious. That is one of a troop that will roll through of about four to maybe five of 20 to 30 turkeys. I mean, we have so many on our property.
That's crazy.
And that creek right behind us, again, every single night they go up and roost. And, yes, it sounds like somebody's getting slaughtered back behind you.
Yeah. I think it's ironic that you have so many turkeys. And this is just how hunting goes. But it's like a 2.5-3 hour drive for me to get to your lease. And I took my dad down there.
Yeah.
And we hoofed around and we didn't see a single bird.
Unbelievable. I mean, dude, you know, I'll go down there just on work days. It doesn't matter what I'm there for, and we'll be followed by a group of 20. You guys go down specifically looking for turkeys and don't see one the entire day.
That's funny.
That's hunting.
That is hunting. All right. So I promised you a story.
Yes.
We have a property that we hunt kind of down near Goldsby-ish, south of Norman. And this was not my first season deer hunting, but my first season really hunting. I had a neighbor when I lived in Choctaw that had some property in Ada, and he took me bow hunting with him a couple of times. Never had anything to shoot at, had a couple of spikes come up, but that first year I just got hooked on, you know, first time I'd ever climbed up in a ladder stand and doing that in the dark by yourself, like, oh man, bow hunting is really cool. This is something I want to pursue more. Anyways, so fast forward a year. Have you heard me tell about this deer we called Lucky?
That sounds vaguely familiar.
We talked about this deer called Lucky for several years. If he's still alive, he has left our zip code. We've not seen him. The neighbors haven't seen him, but he was a good deer. Mm-hmm. He was the first shooter that I really ever saw on the hoof. And there was an evening. It was early. It was October. I'd seen a bunch of does. I'd had some turkeys. I see up on, there's kind of a game trail that runs, it's east-west, but the way that my stand there faces, it's like coming 12 o'clock straight at me, okay. If that makes sense. I'm kind of on the north side of a property tucked right along a tree line in a stand, and this game trail just kind of follows that fence line. Couple hundred yards off in the distance, I see a deer step out. We're getting really close to last light here, and this deer steps out, and it was a sensation I'd never experienced before, right?
Like,
I had seen deer on the hoof. I'd never seen a big deer on the hoof, and this I thought was a big deer, and it turned out to be a good deer. He was, you know, probably 3.5 at the time, but really good genetics.
Yeah.
You know, for me as a brand new hunter, like, nobody was going to fault me for shooting this deer. He may have been 4.5.
Somebody would.
Somebody would.
Guarantee it.
I'll show you some pictures. He was a shooter, for sure.
Yeah, I gotcha. Anyways,
he trails in. I watch him. It was my first real experience with a shootable buck on the hoof. You know, buck fever, heart jumping out of your chest. He comes in and circles around this area, and we've got, you know, I told you last time you were in, I like to set up almost yardage lines with my corn, so I know 20, 25, etc. Well, he comes in and he's settling in, but I've probably got 10 does in there feeding at the same time. Just so many sets of eyeballs,
mm-hmm.
You know, and this stand is kind of exposed. It doesn't have great cover. So I'm thinking, man, there's the buck I want to try to shoot. And if you've never done this as a bow hunter, until I was in this moment, I never had this thought, like,
how do I draw?
How do I draw?
Yeah, man.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you don't just, it's not like you got a rifle rested in front of you, and you just lean in it like, oh, that's a, I've done everything I can for days and weeks to not move a muscle, and now I've got to do this motion, you know? So I'm like, how am I going to figure this out? And as I'm trying to make this game plan, some plane, like a little two-seater something fly, like basically a crop duster, buzzes over the tops of the trees, and all 11 deer in front of me at one time look up at this airplane. And I'm like, oh, thank you, Lord.
Yeah, here we go. Meant to be.
Meant to be. And I draw back, and that was how I took my first shot at a deer.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah, until you're in that moment, you're exactly right. That doesn't really register. Like, wait a minute. So mine, I'm in a tree stand, and it's in the woods, but to the right is kind of a Can-Am slash game trail that leads towards the sun, okay? And it's about a 300-yard trail. So it's getting close to last light. Same deal. I see a nice buck. I can't tell if it's a shooter or not. And it starts, like, meandering its way down towards me. Well, of course, I'm not moving. You can't move a muscle. So for 45 minutes, I wait for this thing. I mean, to finally get within range. It does. Same deal. I'm like, well, I've got it knocked. It's ready to go. It's right here in my hand. How do I do this without this thing seeing me? Well, it comes to the feeder. And then it's not only a matter of getting it back and pulled. It's a matter of them getting at least broadside enough where you feel good enough to take the shot. So, you know, by this time, my back hurts, my legs are cramping, I haven't been able to shift weight at all, and I don't know if the feeder went off, something happened to distract it, and it looked at the feeder and turned about 30 degrees to its left, which gave me its right front shoulder. I was like, all right, this is it. Pulled back. Once I pulled back and noticed that nothing happened, it didn't notice, didn't move at all, that was it. Put the pin right where I wanted it, let it go. And it didn't even pop the string. I mean, it was just a smooth shot. Double lung heart, took two steps and dropped. But until I got to that moment, that's right. It doesn't register. You're like, you've done everything right. You've got all the equipment. You're up in your stand. You've been still. Now, crap, what do I do? How do I do this? I didn't get a plane, but maybe it was a raccoon. Armadillos are really clumsy and make a lot of noise. Might have been that. Whatever it was, it gave this thing just a second's pause to look to its left, and I was able to draw back. On the flip side of that, though, I've also had it where nothing ever happened where I could make a move to draw back. Mm-hmm. I've had them get within range, they've turned broadside, and I knew that if I made a move, they'd be gone.
That's the hardest part, man. Yeah. That's what makes bow hunting so special to me is where a rifle hunt ends, a bow hunt begins.
No doubt.
You know, there's something about that intimacy and the close proximity, and just it never goes the way you want it to go.
Right.
It never goes the way you hope or plan it's going to go. You know, that same deer, that's why we call them lucky. So I hit that deer, and I it was a relatively good shot.
Okay.
Compared to some of the shots you see on social media, and you're like, how did that guy kill that deer with a shot there?
Yeah.
You know, like, I hit him in the right 4-inch box.
Okay.
I was using a mechanical broadhead, and I am convinced it didn't deploy, or it got hung up on a rib or something like that. I hit him in the chest cavity.
Okay.
I didn't penetrate. It stuck out, and as he was running off, the arrow was bouncing.
Like,
I didn't
it.
Even get, you yeah. know, sometimes he's, well, I penetrated him. I hit the scapula, but I got half of the arrow in or
yeah.
something. Like, it hardly penetrated, if any. Skip Johnson came out and helped us trail blood for that one, which was really cool.
That's
Shout
nice,
out to
yeah.
Skip at OU Baseball. Man, he's a bloodhound. Like, he's
good
at what he does. Yeah, he's the real deal. Anyways, like, we never find this deer. 2 weeks later, he shows up back on camera.
Was the arrow sticking out of him?
No. He had a little, like, tuft of hair that was lifted, but
right.
that was, like, no sign of really a bad wound or anything. The neighbor put a crossbow bolt in him the next year. Lived.
Good grief, man.
He ran across our game cam with the bolt in him. The third year, I was in a situation like you're talking about. He was an old deer at this point. He walked up to that fence line. He was 8 yards from me, but there was just all kinds of brush. I couldn't get a chance
yeah.
to draw or take a shot. It wouldn't have been an ethical shot to take. And we spent better part of an hour just kind of doing this dance of he kept walking up to the fence and like looking like he was going to jump over it and then wouldn't.
Mm.
And so the hardest part of bow hunting is when do I draw?
Sure.
You know, And I'd love to get your thoughts on that when I finish the story here, but I have gone back and forth over the years. Where I have settled is I train myself to be able to hold a long time at full draw.
It's the best way. Yep.
So I will draw the earliest opportunity I get,
yep,
even if I'm holding it perpendicular to where I want a shot.
Sure.
You know, it is so much easier to move and rotate slowly from 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 o'clock to shoot where I want if I'm already at full draw,
yeah,
than it is to try to, you know, rotate my body and then draw. That's just what I found works for me.
Well,
how
I mean,
I killed my bear. I've killed deer. I'll draw. There's something I'm going to want to shoot. Draw.
You draw.
And then I wait for my opportunity to move.
Well, you know this. When you pull back on a compound bow, the hard part is getting it back. Mm-hmm. Once you're there, you can pretty much hold it. You know, if you've got any muscle at all in your right arm, you can hold it for a long time.
That
letdown. Yeah. So I'm with you there.
Are you up against a hard wall? Because I know every bow is kind of set up differently with how much it's going to let down.
Yeah.
And whether you still have some give here or if it's a hard wall, what do you like?
Mine is not hard once I get it back.
Okay.
I mean, it is a just literally a spring trigger. You blow on the thing and it's released.
Yeah.
That's what I like. But it's also very easy to keep it, you know, back where it needs to be.
Do you shoot a hinge? Do you shoot a thumb release? Are you a
finger trigger guy?
Yeah, pointer finger.
A spot hog, man. It's the best investment I made.
So one of those that goes around your wrist and your back here?
Yeah, it's actually a boa. It's got a little dial on it that you push down and turn to the right, and it constricts around your wrist.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. It's a nice feeling once that thing is knocked. But I'm with you. I mean, the second you see something, if you're positive you're going to shoot at it and you get a chance, take it. Pull it back and hold.
Mm-hmm.
That's because, yeah, once it gets within 30 yards, I mean, you're kind of screwed at that point, man, because deer are very skittish.
And I know guys today that intentionally set their feeders at 30, 35 yards because of just the more room for error you have at that distance compared to the 15, 20, 25. With today's technology of bows and arrows, you know, 35 yards today was 15 yards 20 years ago in terms of shot confidence and all that. And so anyways, Lucky is standing here on this fence line. Is he, will he, won't he, all that kind of stuff. And I'm the same way. I got my bow in my hand. You know, I'm clipped on. I'm ready to go. And he makes one more move as if he's going, and I'm like, he's jumping this time. So as he comes up, I draw, thinking he's going to come down, land. I will already be at full draw, and then I'll be able to give him some time to collect himself, get comfortable. He saw me draw. He busted me in midair.
Oh.
And, I mean, you want to talk about the athleticism of a deer.
Oh, man.
He hit the ground and in one motion came back over the
fence. Over the fence, yeah. They're pretty impressive. I mean, look, we hunt them and it becomes kind of just a normal thing in Oklahoma to see, oh, there's a deer, whatever. Once you see what they can actually do on the hoof, live and in person, it's impressive. And it also lends to being, look, not to pat ourselves on the back, you have to be a skilled hunter to drop one with a bow.
Yeah.
You just do.
Yeah.
I mean, from everything, controlling your breath, your movement, your shifts. I mean, the way that you turn, the way that you use light, the way that you use other sound in the woods. I mean, it is an actual skill to get one of these things on the ground. It is.
Every bow buck is a trophy buck.
No doubt.
Yeah. Absolutely. We were having that conversation in our hunting group chat a few weeks ago about just killing a deer is hard.
Yes.
You know, having the ability to harvest meat for your family in that way, like, that is such a skill and something I am so proud of. But killing a deer is a completely different thing than killing a buck.
Right.
And killing a buck is a completely different thing than killing a mature buck.
No doubt.
You know? And this isn't a better than anybody else kind of thing, but when you start pursuing mature bucks, it becomes evident how much easier it is to shoot immature bucks.
Well, let's think about that. These things are older and mature for a reason, because they know how to survive. They don't walk into these things that we're talking about. So, yeah, once that happens and you're able to put one on the ground, if you feel a feeling of accomplishment, you should. Because that is an accomplishment. That's a hunting accomplishment. And that is why that's the only type of deer hunting I will do is with a bow. mm-hmm. to feel that. Again, no knock against somebody that, you know, goes out with a six Creedmoor and drops one at 500 yards. Congrats.
Good for you.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Meat for your freezer and a story to tell. And you
absolutely.
Know, yeah. But for you.
That's just a feeling, man.
Yeah.
And it's everybody, it's each your own. Now, we have to get into this because we always do on the topic of mature bucks or not. Look, I don't care what you drop. I had a friend of mine drop a mature 14-point. Oh, goodness. And, of course, somebody in a group text had to say, boy, that thing had potential. You want to talk about ruining a hunter's day. Throw that out there after a kill. Man, oh, man. All right, here's the problem we run into. We've got guys on our lease that have 6, 7, 8 heads on their wall already, okay? So what they are looking to take is going to be different than somebody that has none. And this guy had none. So it's different perspectives, and I get that. But, man, there's no need to say that out loud for the hunter that took it to see ever.
Celebrate with him.
Celebrate. Be happy for him. Don't
not
be
only
jealous.
For the hunter, but for that life that they just took.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
You know, not only does the hunter deserve that, but that deer deserves that respect.
Sure. Absolutely agree with that. But you're always going to have that one person or two that are like, you know what, that thing in time would have been really whatever.
I told you what I did, right? Recently.
Yeah. I'm here for it. What can I tell you, dude?
There's one in every group.
Yep.
We had a guy, Jace Brewer. He's been on the show a number of times. He was actually our very first guest.
Wow.
He came on the very first one of these. But good dear friend of mine, great skilled hunter and bowsman. Is that a thing? Do you call him bowsman? Archer?
I will from now on.
Bowsman,
yeah.
Like you would call someone a boatsman or something. I like that. He's a good bowsman. Shot a really good deer recently. Like, no doubter shooter.
Right.
But like your group chat, ours is probably a little less serious about it, you know? But we will always be, oh, that one's got potential. This one needs another year, you know? He shot a really good deer. 10-point, nice buck, heavy antlers. We all went out. All of the guys that were hunting that lease this year happened to be in town and available. So we all went out and trailed blood together, just really like communal experience to go retrieve this buck and celebrate with them. And if it was anybody else, I wouldn't have said this, but just the relationship he and I have.
Yeah.
We find the deer, we walk up to it, he places his hands on the antlers, and I'm recording, you know, like him on my phone, actually go up and place his hands on the animal for the very first time. Cool moment. We're all there to celebrate him. The minute I stop recording, I say to everybody else, well, we're all thinking it. He needed another year.
One more year, man. Just one. Who would have taken that thing?
And Jace was a great sport. He knew I was just busting his chops. But it's kind of become that, you know?
It has. And, again, you know, you get guys that are going to be out looking for different things. That's fine. You get guys that are going to – they're going to want the genetics of that deer, right? They see it and down, like, wow, that would have been really good to stay and reproduce on our lease. So I get that, man. But this is a case-by-case thing. Keep that in mind. If somebody takes their first deer, shut up and celebrate with them. End of story.
If somebody takes a deer.
Exactly.
I don't care if it's their first, you know. And this is the way we try to articulate it on our lease. Yes, we want to hunt and pursue mature deer because we appreciate the difference in the skill that it takes to do that. We also are a group of guys that are okay harvesting an animal once every 3 or 4 years, if that's what it takes to find that spot.
Right.
But I am never going to belittle someone that wants to shoot a deer every year. That's why Josh Stratton's not a fit for our lease. And we've had that conversation on the air, is he wants to fill his freezer every year. And that's great.
Yeah.
You know, we've got places that we can go do that. But that's not what we're trying to do with this particular property.
Makes sense, man.
Right. My favorite thing, and then we got to squeeze in another break. I love when people will post pictures online of like a Euro mount, or they found a deadhead or something like that. And people in the comments will say, he'll be a giant next year.
Oh, never change. Oklahoma, never change.
I love it. You're listening to the Outdoor Hour on 107.7, The Franchise.
Now back to the Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor Hour, final segment. Taylor Maples, David.
Oh, it's like my cousin isn't here, dude. I'm here for it. I mean, that's the only time I ever heard that growing up is when I was in trouble for mom or dad. David Allen. Like, yeah.
Ooh, David Allen.
Yeah, that stings.
David Allen is with us. That's going to stick, man.
Yeah.
Well, so here's another Easter egg for our listeners. Somebody this week was talking to me about the Outdoor Hour and talking, man, first of all, Goldfish, they were complimenting the intros that we do is really where it started. They said, it's so much fun when you guys get rocking around and that music's playing and all that. And they said, Joshua Wildman Stratton, like what a character and what a name and a good nickname. And I said, that's not a nickname. Like that's his legal middle name.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That's where that came
that's
from.
That's badass.
Yeah, I know. That's like probably an all-time greatest. And for him to be who he is and what he does.
That's perfect.
Yeah. Wild man. So anyways.
Yeah, he wants fish in the Gulf of Mexico, right?
Yeah. So he goes frequently down to Venice, where I know you've been.
Yeah. I actually had a story. And this ties into deer hunting a bit.
Okay.
Ties into the outdoor world. Look, we're dudes and we have a dude diet, right? And when you get out in the wild, you know, look, we're human. Sometimes you got to go, right? So what do you do? Now, when I'm in the woods, you know, they've got things called dude wipes that I always take with me in my bag. Now, when you're fishing in the Gulf of Mexico, however, a little bit different. So we go on a week-long trip to Venice, right, where you get a couple days, you know, way offshore, 50, 100 miles offshore and then inshore. Well, the offshore day, you wake up at 3 o'clock that morning. The place we stayed was all-inclusive. So you go downstairs, and the cook had made, I don't know why she thought this was a good call on this morning. They were like doughy biscuits with like melted like creamy cheese and sausage inside. And I took one look. And I'm like, ain't happening because I know where that's going to go and I know where we're about to be. Now, a friend of ours in the group did not heed this advice. And I'm watching in amazement as I'm lubing up with sunscreen. He puts away like three of them. And I'm like, dude. Anyway, so, okay, the captains get there. You know, it's a big Baja. You got the four Mercruisers across the back, and we tear off across the Delta and then finally hit open water, and he's hammered down. And my friend, I can see it in his face. He's hurting, and he kind of struggles up to the captain, and I see him talk to him a second, comes back down and sits down. I'm like, dude, are you okay? He's like, no, I'm not. My stomach, this is one of those times. It's bad. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. What the captain says, like, we ain't stopping. I'm like, okay. And did he say anything else? He's like, yeah, there's a bucket on the bow. You know, pretty much have at it. And he's like, I ain't doing that. So we make it about 15 more minutes out into open water. Well, yeah, he was doing that. He goes up front to the bow and spread eagled over the bucket where he spent the remainder pretty much of the day fishing. While we were all having the time of our lives, you know, hammering tuna and just videoing and yeah, high fiving. He's up over the bucket, just you know, kind of gave Ocean Spray a new meaning.
I could have done without that.
Oh, dude, it's something I will never forget. I'm not gonna say the guy's name. One of my best friends lives kind of where we do on the lease, but hopefully he learned his lesson, dude. Do not eat that stuff. You know, watch what you eat the night before you go out.
It's hard, man. And I feel like as I have entered my 30s, that's something I've had to become more aware of.
You do.
You used to get away with that stuff.
Yes.
You know, we used to go in college. We'd get up and go duck hunting. We've told those stories here a lot on the show before class. And, man, just dragging ourselves out to the duck blinds. Yeah, that's a part of hunting in the outdoor world lifestyle that we don't talk about often. But it's funny you mention that. It's funny you mention it in that setting. I'm reading a book right now. I just started it. I love it. It's called Lords of the Fly.
Okay.
And it is a book about tarpon fishing and the pursuit of the world record tarpon.
I have to stop you. I thought you meant Lord of the Flies, the old book. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not that one.
No,
okay.
No. This one is, so that's Lord of the Flies.
Okay.
This is Lords of the Fly.
Clever.
And it's really good. I'm only like 30 pages into it so far, but it starts out talking about a little area on the Gulf of Mexico, Florida, that back in like the 70s and 80s was the place to chase, you know, 170-pound tarpon. And the first story they tell is about a angler named Tom Evans, who is one of an elite group of people. He's an old guy now. And I'll be honest, I haven't finished the book. I think he's still alive.
Yeah.
I'm still very new in my tarpon pursuit life. Anyways, one of those guys that to this day would still spend like a month at a time chasing tarpon. But back in the day, it might be 90 days that they'd go out straight, you know, him and one guide that had teamed up together. Anyway, so the story they're telling is back, I think it was 1977. He and this guide together land at the time what was the world record tarpon, but it never got logged in the record books because the guide actually caught the fish.
Ooh.
And he was basically ashamed and embarrassed. The guide's name is Huff. Last name was Huff. He refused to enter the fish. You know, they killed it, they measured it, they did all the official stuff, but they never recorded it in the record books because he says, I was the guide, it was not my place. But the story that happened is Evans was hanging off the back of the boat at the time, recovering from the night before.
Yeah, I can see that.
And these fish approach, and Huff says, hey, fish 12 o'clock. Evans says, ain't no way.
Just not going to happen, dude.
You're going to have to take the shot. And Evans says, Huff says, and finally decides to take the shot, ends up landing, I think it was at the time, 177-pound.
Wow.
Tarpon world record by like 18 or 19 pounds, like shattered the world record prior.
Think about the honesty from that group though, man. Yeah. How many people nowadays would just be like, I caught it.
Yeah. So it never got into the books. And so the book is telling the story of Evan's pursuit to go catch that fish and a bigger fish. And he ultimately does. And, you know, the world record has grown and grown. And that part of the world has just gotten blown out on tarpon fishing as a result. But funny that I was reading that literally a couple of nights ago. That is more of a common occurrence in the outdoors than I think we want the public to know about.
Well, I'm pretty sure the captain on that boat had a bucket just for that case.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure, that's not the only guest it's happened to, man.
We've got one in our storm shelter for the same reason.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's probably something that, like, the first few times I went hunting, it didn't register until it did.
Yeah.
And now I've got that side of it covered just in case.
My wife probably wants everyone to know that we've never used that bucket.
Okay. I've got a little, like, a hatch open bathroom on our boat that we keep down at Eufaula.
Yeah.
And it's there. Now, have I ever let anyone use it? Ever? No. I never will.
But you got to be prepared.
It's
right?
There.
We've all been in that situation.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Man. Well, we'll have to do this in another episode, but I told you that I spent about a week in Arkansas guiding my family
around. Yes, man.
We'll do that next time.
Okay.
It's okay. We got plenty of time in the future, but had a great time. I'll tease it a little bit for you now. I bought the drift boat in April. I made a couple of quick trips that spring, but it's just been so hot this summer. We haven't really been back. So it's been a few months, got back on the sticks, rowing the boat went really good. I actually convinced my wife to row the boat for a little bit so I could fish a little. And, she had a good time kind of learning how, and everybody that went caught fish. We had a great time, bunch of fish in the boat, good vibes. It was really special to kind of get to share that place and that experience with my family.
That's awesome.
I got my mom and my sister on a night trip.
Yeah.
We went out at like, I think 9 or 10 p.m. and floated till 2 a.m.
Nice.
My mom got a good brown to the boat, but it got off somehow right as we were trying to net it. But at least we got to see, you know, probably a 20, 22-inch brown, in the dark on a drift boat. Super cool. So fun experience. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in the future, but shout out to the guys over at JD Adams and Company for their help always. When I'm preparing for this stuff, I have started tying my own leaders. I used to buy tapered leaders and now I'm tying them myself, and they help me figure out what I need. The other thing that they did is they taught me how to the phrase is peg an egg.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of pegging an egg?
I have not.
This is something I'd heard that term thrown around, but I'd never broke down and just said, okay, somebody tell me what this actually means. So when trout are eating eggs, they'll just kind of, they'll just inhale them, right? They're not biting them the same way that they do a bug.
Okay.
So if you're using an egg pattern that is, you know, got the hook in the egg, a lot of times that's going to get down like into the belly and it's going to hook them real deep and you're going to have to just cut it off.
Right.
So the concept of pegging the egg is you basically slide an egg bead further up the line from the hook and you break off like a toothpick, or they make plastic pieces in there, and that's the peg part.
Okay.
So that the egg stays where you want on the line.
Okay.
I was taught by Steve at J.D. Adams, just loop the line around it a couple of times, and that'll hold that egg in place. But that way, when the fish sees the egg and, you know, inhales that egg right down the throat, the hook isn't attached to the egg. The hook is now sticking right inside the limb.
Where it needs to go.
Where it needs to go. So, super cool concept. I'd never done that before.
They've also got cold beer inside when you walk in, J.D. Adams.
Yeah, they do.
Sorry, that's pimp, dude.
Yeah.
You and I were going to go fishing a couple weeks ago. Football season got in the way of that. It's now like winding down, so we're going to make that trip.
We're going to make that trip, man. Get over to J.D. Adams and Company. They're very helpful. Great knowledge, great resources, good place to pick up gear, and they've always got cold beverages for you, so it's my favorite place to hang out for sure. They are at 122nd and North May Avenue in Oklahoma City. Look for the sign that says Fly Shop on the side of the building.
Very cool place.
There you go. I'm Taylor Maples. That's David Allen.
I knew it was coming.
Behind the glass is Matty Goldfish. Always good to see you, my friend.
Always, always. It had been too long.
I know.
I felt lost in this weary world.
I know.
Just adrift in my fishbowl.
Glad you made it through.
Yep.
Just two lost souls.
Yeah. And that peg-egg conversation would have gone way differently if Josh was here.
Yes.
Just saying.
Absolutely. trust me, I heard it. This is the Outdoor Hour. Find us online on social media at outdoor_hour, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. You can find me at T_Maples on Twitter and Instagram. David Allen.
Hell, I don't know. You go to the franchise. I'm all over their Twitter page.
Yeah.
At Danny_BigMac13, I think.
Yeah. You will forever, to me, just be Crash Davis. Yeah.
Maybe I should go back to that.
That's okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Be my radio personality.
Just call it Crash. I kind of like David Allen.
You gonna go with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us, man. Always fun.
Anytime, brother.
Yeah.
Always love it.
Love it. This is the Outdoor Hour. Thank you for joining us. Until next time, go boldly. We'll see you outdoors.